Welcome to ByteWise, the podcast where technology meets risk management. And now, introducing the hosts, Daniela Parker, with a background in risk management and a passion for making risk-aware decisions. Next, Glenn Sorensen, a veteran in cybersecurity and supporting while protecting. And last but not least, Brian Talon, the technology whiz who's a master of collaboration. Ever wondered how blockchain's potential weighs against its pitfalls? Or how AI's advancements align with ethical considerations? Whether listeners are tech aficionados looking to view challenges through a risk lens or risk professionals seeking clarity in the digital maze, ByteWise has them covered. Dive in as the trio decodes, discusses, and demystifies the intertwined realms of technology and risk. Tune into ByteWise, where technology and risk converge with clarity and insight.
Hello, and thank you for joining us on a new episode of ByteWise, and especially today because we have our first ever guest on the show. We're really excited to have Kip Boyle join us today. Kip, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much, Daniela.
So Kip is a cyber resilience thought leader. He's a fractional CISO and CEO of Cyber Risk Opportunities and has a very impressive resume in the technology and cyber risk management space. Kip has written a book. He's a course instructor for LinkedIn Learning, hosts his own podcast called Cyber Risk Management, which I am a big fan of. And he is involved in several projects that support the cybersecurity community. I'm going to link to Kip's LinkedIn profile in the show notes, and I would encourage all of our listeners to connect with him there and learn about some of the things that he's working on. Our very own Glenn and Kip actually work together at Cyber Risk Opportunities. So Glenn, will you share a bit more about that with our listeners?
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm a virtual CISO for Kip and Cyber Risk Opportunities. And I've learned a lot of things over the handful of years I've known Kip and worked with him.
Specifically, you're going to join the company. That's fantastic.
Well, yeah, indeed. So there's a lot of things that we can say about, you know, practical cyber risk management. And I've learned a lot of things from Kip that way and enjoy doing the kind of work that we do together.
So. Awesome. Thanks, Glenn. So last week we talked about artificial intelligence. We kind of kicked the topic off at a very high level because we know that there's so much to it and we can't possibly squeeze that into a 30-minute episode. The one thing that we can probably all agree on is that the question is no longer and really hasn't been for a while whether or not organizations should use AI. It has brought incredible advantages regarding productivity, efficiencies, and all that. And it would be really foolish to think that we can stop that train. And again, why would we, right? But the question then shifts to how do we actually do it? And for me as a risk manager, I embrace that approach wholeheartedly because I always believe that our job isn't to say no. Our job is to make sure that we help organizations achieve their strategic objectives and do so safely. And so today we invited Kip to talk to us about some of the things that we need to consider when deploying and using AI in our organizations. So the episode might go over our usual 30 minutes, but we promise it'll be worth your time. And Glenn will kick us off with question number one for Kip.
Yeah. Kip, can you share your insights on the ethical, legal, and practical considerations that the companies, that organizations should keep in mind while developing, deploying, using, managing AI technologies, and how you would suggest that management of these things occur?
You know, we could do the whole episode just on this one question, right? There's so much to unpack here, but I'll tell you what, I'll do my best to be concise, and because I know we have more questions, and I think the other questions are really great, and I want to talk about them as well. So the first thing I want to tell everybody is I'm not a software developer, and I'm not an artificial intelligence expert per se. My perspective comes from everything I'm going to tell you comes from these two perspectives. First, I'm a small business owner. So I have to figure out how to use AI in my business and how to serve my customers with this technology. And so that's one perspective. And then the other perspective is some of our customers have invited me to help them figure out the same thing. How should they incorporate artificial intelligence into what they do? And so I feel very fortunate because I'm getting you know, both sides of that. The third dimension I should probably mention is I'm a user of artificial intelligence, and I want to make a specific call out to Daniel Meisler because he has an open source project going on right now called Fabric, and between using ChatGPT both in the consumer version as well as through the API that they offer, I also am experimenting with this open source project that actually allows us so much freedom in terms of how we interact with the ChatGPT-4 algorithm, and it's fascinating. So anyway, so that's, I'm going to use those frames of reference to answer your question. All right, first thing everybody has to know is this is all a work in process. Even though artificial intelligence has been something that Hollywood has scared the bejesus out of us with for years, and we've been using AI longer than we probably realized. All those chatbots on websites are machine learning driven. If you use Grammarly as a virtual keyboard, guess what? That's machine learning driven. And now we've got these large language models, but nobody really knows what to make of all this. It's so emergent. Okay, so everything I tell you is subject to change. For example, when GPT-5 comes out and in its general release, it could change everything that I'm about to tell you. Now, Glenn, you asked about three specific dimensions: ethical, legal, and practical. I'm just going to give you short answers, and then you know we can unpack it further, however you'd like to do it. So, ethically, I believe the framework to apply is one that I learned when I went to Seattle University into a graduate program that I did. We did a course on ethics, and one of my big takeaways from that is, you know, an ethical decision is good when it's good for you. At the same time, it's good for your stakeholders, and at the same time, it's good for your community. So, if any one of those, groups of people or yourself are coming out on the raw end of a decision, then that's probably not an ethical decision, and I think that's a reasonable thing to ask. You know, to put AI through that model. So that's kind of how I think about the ethics of it. The legal bit, all I know is two things. One, you can't copyright the raw output of an AI model, and you can't use them as to create fictitious cases that you file in court briefs.
Indeed. As the example shows.
And you know what? We talked about that.
That's happened more than once at this point. I saw another case reported in the news, and I believe it was in Canada. Some attorney in Canada did that. Now, the third thing is the practical considerations. And we'll touch on these a little bit more with some of the other questions you have. But here's the practical bit. You need to start using it yourself right away. And that's why I made a point of telling everybody I'm using it right now. Because how can this stuff is so different from anything we've ever encountered. How can you make ethical decisions? How can you make decisions inside of a legal framework if you don't understand this thing? So you got to start using it.
You know what I like it. What I love about how you just explained that, Kip, is that it is really not that much different from anything else we take on, right? We have to do our due diligence. We have to evaluate the ethical implications, legal. And yet there seems to be this fear, like you said, because we talked in the last episode about my image of AI, of the brain that's floating around in the basement making decisions, right? But that I think is a big part of what we're dealing with, is that this is just something new and we need to apply similar concepts to what we do with everything.
Yeah. And I think as an information security practitioner, I have an advantage because if there's one thing about our work is everything's changing all the time. And so we're always having to say, oh, okay, how do I secure this new thing? Oh, how do I secure that new thing? So the pattern is the same. And what I learned in my career is that I need to use something that doesn't change in order to measure and manage something that does change all the time. And in my line of work, that would be like security design principles, like defense in depth or fail-safe stance or belt and suspenders or whatever, right? There's all kinds of them that you can use, and those rarely change. So if you can use something that rarely changes in order to understand and manage something that changes all the time, I think that's the only leverage we have.
So Kip, as somebody who owns a small business and, you know, in the field you're in, how do you balance the need to, you know, leverage AI for innovation and also ensure the privacy and security of data? Have you had the opportunity to do that? Do you have any examples you can talk about?
Yeah, I can. So I can talk about it from my small company perspective, and I can also give you some insights from customers that we're helping. So from my perspective, we have a lot of dirty digital laundry. And what I mean by that is every company we work with, because, you know, we are a cybersecurity and cyber risk management consultancy, everybody who works with us tells us their dirty little secrets, and we have to store those someplace, right? So so we're a little treasure box of secrets. And so what I tell my team is, use AI for innovation. However, do not put customer data into a public artificial intelligence model, and do not put any trade secrets of CRO, because we do have some trade secrets and they know what they are. And so I've said, you know, you can't use that stuff with public AI models. Maybe in the future, if we get a private AI model that we train ourselves that is self-hosted, probably in the cloud, that might change the guidelines. But for now, you know, that's what we follow internally. Now, one of my customers is a professional sports team, and they are using AI all over the place, and they're trying to figure out how to govern it. And by the way, if you love the term shadow IT, well, now there's shadow AI. Okay, it's going on Yes. everywhere. And so a couple of interesting things that they learned is marketing. It turns out that these AI, like these large language models, the ones that can do graphics, for example, well, they found out that their marketing department has been using it, I'm trying to remember the names of the different ones. Somebody help me here. What the name of an LLM that can make images.
Well, ChatGPT can. One of their ones does.
Dolly.
It Dolly. Can't spell.
Yeah. So Dolly, yeah. Dolly's one, and there's others. Okay, but I just wanted to make sure that I said at least the name of one of them. So it turns out their marketing team has been using Dolly and some of these other ones to create imagery for upcoming promotions and so forth. And that's become a big problem, not because of data sensitivity, but because they will typically register copyrights or trademarks on their campaigns, on their imagery, but they can't if they take it straight out of these LLM services, because as I said, you can't copyright raw output, and that's already been determined by the U.S. Copyright and Patent Office. So that's a hard boundary, and so now they're trying to figure out what to do about that. And I guess another example that I'll give you real quick is one place where we can use it in my company is we have something we call a deployment kit. So whenever anybody works with us and they want to figure out what their top cyber risks are, then we give them a mitigation roadmap, and we try to give them a starting point for every mitigation. And so whether it's a communications template or a policy template or like a default design spec or something like that, it's all generic. And so I've told my team, hey, if you want to create more deployment kit items to use to give away to our customers, that's a great use of this generative AI.
I learned something new. I was under the impression that the images created in Dolly are actually up for grabs. Not that I have done that. but good to know. Even though, again, they can't spell, they can never get the spelling right on anything. But they're great images. But, you know, it's interesting that, you know, usually in my industry, regulation is always 20 years behind technology. Mm. Looks like someone got to it a little quicker there. So you mentioned at the beginning of the episode that by the time this airs, possibly some of the information may not be up to date anymore, right? Because we're looking at a very rapidly evolving landscape when it comes to AI. Can you talk to us a little bit about what some of the key strategies are for businesses to stay ahead in that landscape, mm-hmm. especially the ones that are maybe integrating AI for the first time and are just not that familiar with it?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I think the first thing everybody has to realize is that you probably don't have a choice about staying ahead or falling behind. The only thing you have a choice about is, are you going to govern it or not? Really, I think that's the choice. Because, you know, I teased about shadow IT and shadow AI. Here's the thing. All this AI stuff is pretty much seeping up through the floorboards of our boat, right? If we're in a boat,
yes.
This stuff's coming in. And so it's like, do you want to like bail the water or not bail the water? I mean, that's really your only choice.
Yes.
Yep.
There are products you've used for years that are now incorporating AI that never used to.
Yeah. Some of them are charging you for it. And so you have to say yes to accept it. But other stuff is not charging for it and you're just getting it. And there's no on-off switch, right? Or people are just signing up for stuff with a credit card, or they're just using it in a freemium way. And So I don't think you have a choice about it being used. Trust me, everyone's using it. So it's just a question of, are you going to govern it? So I would start with the NIST Artificial Intelligence Risk Management Framework, the AI RMF from NIST. Holy moly, do we need more TLAs? I don't know. But I would start with that. Now, we don't have time to pull apart this publication in on this episode, but here's where the crossover happens. Okay. This is like a good 70s sitcom moment where I'm gonna cross over. Jake Bernstein and I, Jake is a cybersecurity and privacy attorney. He's my co-host for the Cyber Risk Management Podcast. We just recorded two episodes, a back-to-back episode on the Artificial Intelligence RMF. And those are going to drop on March 12th, part one, and March 26th, part two. And we go deep into it. But for the purposes of right now, I will tell you that the AI RMF somewhat resembles version 2 of the NIST cybersecurity framework, because there's a govern function, and then there's three other functions that are use case specific. And version 2 of CSF has a govern function, and then it has other functions that are use case specific as well. And the three functions in the AI RMF are called map, measure, and manage. So there's four altogether. And it's actually not that tough to understand. It's not as big as the cybersecurity framework. It's actually about maybe half the size. So I would go get it and start reading it now and use it.
And I will go ahead and link to the podcast in the show notes as well. So that, you know, listeners can hop on over and listen to those two episodes, because it sounds like that's going to be worth everyone's time as well. So thanks for sharing that.
You bet.
So Kip, as AI literacy is becoming, you know, more and more important across all levels of an organization, how do you foster a culture of continuous learning and adaptability to AI advancements within an organization?
Yeah, I can talk about what I'm doing in my company. The first thing I did is I said to myself, we better talk about this, because I knew everybody was aware of it, but we weren't talking about it. I didn't hear anybody talking about it. And I thought, well, I better go first. So so one of the first things I did is I shared a video. It was one of Daniel Meisler's videos where he was talking about his Fabric open source project. And Daniela, I'll send you the link to that. So if you want to put it in the show notes.
Yeah, absolutely.
And
it's worthwhile.
Okay, good. So I gave them that video to watch. And then after some days went by, I said, well, you know, what did you think? And then I gave a demo. I actually showed how I use that. And then we created a dedicated Slack channel so that we could talk about what we were seeing. And then what we did is we worked together. We're not a very big company. There's like six of us right now. And we actually created our own AI acceptable use policy. And it really started with me just drafting out practically on the back of an envelope what I thought would work. And then I shared it with the team. And then we talked about it. And they gave some really great feedback that made it better. And so now we have an AI AUP. And now I'm saying, go and use these AI technologies within the boundaries of the AUP and let us know what happens. So that's what we did.
Can I tag on to that? We've talked about governance quite a bit, and I would love to hear some of your thoughts on the governance piece, right? Because I think automatically people tend to think that the IT space has to own AI. That's it, right? Like IT is going to own it and they're going to tell us what to do. From my perspective, my concern on the AI side is really working in financial services, more of a legal and compliance piece, and not the compliance that's not in place with AI, but there is compliance that we have to follow. And when we use AI, that we still have to make sure that whatever the output is falls within whatever regulatory requirements we have, right? Mm-hmm. Can you talk to us a little bit about that governance piece? Like, I want to hear your opinion. I have my opinion, but I'd love to hear yours.
Okay. So, you know, set the trap, invite Kip in. I get it.
You've seen right through us.
And yet I still agreed to be a guest. What do you think?
And we appreciate it.
Okay, when you read the govern function in the AI RMF, it looks very similar to the govern function in the CSF. So you're gonna see stuff that looks pretty familiar, except you're gonna see the acronym AI a lot. Just as an example, govern 1.1, it says legal and regulatory requirements involving AI are understood, managed, and documented. Well, I could have said, instead of AI, I could have said cybersecurity. So, you know, it's again, these are fairly timeless principles of governance. Mm-hmm. And somebody did a search and replace for, you know, AI. So I find that actually to be encouraging, because as I said before, if you're managing something that changes all the time, you've got to find something that doesn't change very much. So I think there's some goodness here. The trick though is, if again, going back to that 1.1 item, legal and regulatory requirements involving AI are understood. Well, that's a moving target. So that means just because I understand it now doesn't mean I understand it in 90 days. So doing this once isn't going to solve my problem. So you have to understand it. You have to manage it. Well, my management methods may have to change as well. If my understanding of it changes, if I have to reframe it, or if we go from GPT-4 to 5, And then from 5, who knows, do we get general artificial intelligence, which would be another thing altogether? Well, how do I manage that? And then documented. Holy moly, we can barely document the stuff that doesn't change very much, right? How in the world are we going to keep up with this? So I think that's the real challenge. It isn't so much that we have a overambitious governance function. It's just that this thing's a slippery little eel. You know, try to catch it if you can.
And I would say there's a lot of investment being placed in the development of, you know, all of this AI and all the tooling that incorporates AI all over the map and all over the board.
Yeah.
So.
So anyway, that's what I thought about governance. Daniela, did you want to share what you think? You said you had an opinion.
I always have opinions. I just, again, like what I encounter is really more of the, you know, it's a technology problem only piece. And that then plays into some of the governance role, right? And I just believe that the organization as a whole has to be involved in that.
Yeah.
And really for me, like a committee approach, if you can, you know, stomach another committee in your organization, but And then the biggest piece for me is really the educational part, right? Understanding that there is no brain floating in the basement and it
unfortunately,
right? But we will get there. I know we will get there and guarantee you, but really understanding that this is another tool that we need to learn more about. And to your point, the shadow AI is probably what makes me more nervous than anything, but that's the same with shadow IT, right? It's like, what are people doing that we don't know about? And then
I love what you're saying, Daniela, that it's not just an IT problem. And in that way, it mirrors what we're struggling with cybersecurity and cyber risk, right? Because people think it's just an IT problem. Mm-hmm. And we're having to, you know, convince people that, no, this is a material business risk, not an IT problem, right? So we got to treat it differently. And with this, I would say AI is a capability, not a tool, right? Because if you call it a tool, that sort of reinforces the narrative that it's an IT issue. It's a capability composed of tools and composed of process and composed of management and policy. So that's how I like to think about it.
I love that approach. Like, and that be to your point, that changes the tone of that conversation.
Right? Because,
yeah, absolutely. I'm going to start using that from now on. It is a capability. Yeah, that's awesome.
So we kind of touched on this a little bit, but I want to bring it to the forefront here. So all of these AI functions and capabilities are being rolled into products and, you know, things that we are already using, new things that are popping up all the time. So how do you know if a third party is using a public version of AI or something that may be passing your data or, you know, using your data to train on? How can you find that out? And maybe what are some of the questions you can ask when you're going through a due diligence process that might surface some of that?
Everyone's asking this right now. So this is great. Unfortunately, I don't think that the answer is that much better than the question of, are you safeguarding my sensitive data in the way, is at least as well as I would, right? So if I'm a financial institution and I contract with a fintech, and they're taking transfers of sensitive information. Well, they're not a bank. They're not a financial institution of any kind, credit union. And the people that work there at the fintech may have never worked in a financial institution. So culturally, they don't get it at all, right? They're a tech company, probably is the way they think of themselves. So that's sort of the landscape that I think is applicable here as well with AI. But having said that, I would just say, first of all, ask straight out, how are you using it? It's really not a question of, are you using it? We no more than it's a question of, are we using it, right? Everyone's mm-hmm. using it. We have shadow AI everywhere. The question is, are you governing it or are you not governing it? Because remember, I told you my perception is it's not a question of do you or do you not AI. It's do you or do you not govern AI?
And I can just see the deer in the headlights look from the salesperson, the sales rep, when you ask that.
Of course, yeah. This is the new thing for them, right? What I would do too is I would also emphasize that, you know, you probably have data confidentiality agreements in your outsourcing contract. And if you don't, shame on you, because by this point, it's not a myth. but I would imagine that unless your clauses are strangely worded, they would probably apply to a public AI use case, right? So your vendor can't use your sensitive data in a public AI context any more than they could use it to conduct their own marketing activities.
Well, and the nice thing is that, I mean, AI sells, right? So vendors are using that as a sales tool, which makes it easier for us to say, well, the name of your company includes AI. So clearly something's up.
Yeah. No, I think you just assume that they're using it and then just find out how they're governing it and remind them that, you know, you're obligated to protect our data. You can't just use it for whatever you want. And make sure you read their terms of services, their privacy policies, especially if you get a notification that they've changed. That's a big way that a lot of companies and a lot of individuals are learning how their data is being used to train AI models, is that these notices and these policies are changing. And but you got to get in there and read it. And the other thing I would say is the AI RMF, those three functions that that I said are use case specific, the map, the measure, and the manage, you can use those during the vendor due diligence phase if you want to get really specific.
I really like how you said, again, it's how we govern it. And I think that can apply to a lot of things that we do in organizations, but it's really key. And one of my bigger takeaways from today, as well as the capability, right? It's a capability, not a tool. So I really appreciate that. I had one more question. In regards to the data privacy regulations that are, you know, popping up in every state now and all over the place, do you anticipate that, because everybody's waiting for some sort of a regulatory piece to come out regarding AI, from your perspective, do you think this is going to be a state level thing again, or is there maybe going to be a federal effort this time to make it a little easier on people? I would just like to hear your thoughts.
Boy, I might be the wrong person to ask, because it might be because I'm not an attorney that I'm not watching for this. It might also be because I'm really more of a practitioner, right? So my default is to just get in there and figure out what to do. What, you know, and the whether or not there's regulatory guidance, you know, it's like, doesn't stop me, just because there may not be. So I don't know. I'm not really sure what's going to happen there. I can tell you that the only thing I've seen that looks like regulatory guidance is this AI RMF. But of course, that's a voluntary framework, right? So it's not compulsory. But I don't know. I would flip the question back to Glenn or Brian. Have you guys seen anything?
I have not seen anything in particular. But based on what we've seen in the past, I think we're still struggling very much with cybersecurity and privacy laws, regulations, getting politicians and bureaucrats to kind of understand even that much. I mean, they're way behind the practitioners in all of that, right? So, I see this coming out at that speed as well, despite the fact that AI is maybe moving even faster than some of the things that we've dealt with in the past.
Well, it will possibly be the AI will just create the whole thing for us.
I have long joked that either AI will rule us better than we do, or will, you know, destroy us all. So, you know.
Brian, any insights from you on that?
No, I haven't seen much in terms of legislation. Politicians right now are fairly busy to solve any problems, you know.
Yeah. Okay, agreed.
Yeah.
Well, awesome. This was definitely an episode packed with some really great information. Thank you again so much, Kip, for making time for this today. I just love talking about how our disciplines really enable organizations rather than slow them down, right? And really, like you said, you just get in there and make it work and see how we can do it safely. And I think that some of the things we touched on today definitely showed that. As I mentioned, I'm going to link to all the pieces that you shared today, the podcast, Daniel Miesler, and everything in the show notes, so our listeners can tap into that information as well. And we will be back in 2 weeks with more exciting topics on Bytewise. Thank you again.
Thank you for joining us on Bytewise today. As we wrap up, we're reminded of the ever-evolving world of technology and its intricate dance with risk. Whether you're diving deep into code or dissecting risk scenarios, remember to always bridge understanding with insight. Until next time, stay curious, stay informed, and keep tuning into Bytewise.